Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, we await Nick Caserio, Texans general manager. We're keeping an eye on things with the Texans, keeping an eye on the press conference. 9 o'clock today is when the press conference is supposed to begin. I would say the biggest things that that I'm looking for from Nick, looking to get answers on, the quarterback situation. Case Keenum goes to injured reserve. So they've got two quarterbacks right now. Is it as simple as just bring Tim Boyle back and put him on the practice squad? Or are they looking around for another quarterback who's maybe a better system fit to be the third quarterback? And if so, do they carry that quarterback on the roster? So we know Case is done for the year. He was put on the injured reserve, the version of injured reserve where he's done for the season. So I think that's number one. Number two, I'm anxious to find out the mechanics behind arriving at the running back room that they did. You know, obviously they love what Cam Akers did. I don't think they're going to show their cards on Damian Pierce and what they're thinking there other than we know about Damian. We know what Damian is and he's on the team. And I don't think Nick's going to show much there. Seth, and then British Brooks, you've touched on it a few times today.
Yeah.
I'm really anxious to see if he answers the question, like, that's a guy who, I would hope that that's the answer. Like, if truly that's what happened, I would hope that that's the answer. If for nothing else, to illustrate the importance of the preseason games, that he earned the job in the last week of camp.
Right, yeah. The question being, or the topic being, all right, well, yeah, was this a guy that had to come in and really earn it in that last game? And I'd be surprised if it wasn't, because they very much looked like they wanted to see what he had as a blocker. I'd say he had at least 10 plays where he was lined up as a fullback or an inline tight end or an H-back, non-running back positions. And they did most of that before he got the bulk of his reps at running back. So I think they wanted to really see how he would latch onto that. And he did it extremely well. And in a game where one of the other fullbacks got four holding penalties, he did it without literally latching on.
Yeah.
He may have latched on by not latching on.
Yes.
He blocked.
The irony. Yeah.
He blocked by being a thundering sledgehammer into the chest of defensive linemen, defensive ends, safeties. It was really cool to see. And by Brooks' excitement, I'm going to have Brandon hopefully ask British Brooks this later on if he sees in the locker room. I'm just curious about what pregame pep talk he got. Because after every one of British Brooks' big blocks, he was looking towards the sideline and pointing at somebody and like really celebrating.
Yeah.
I think somebody told him, look, man, this is how you're gonna make this team, is if you go out there and you block your ass off.
Yep. He was fired up. So I think quarterback. The wide receiver room, I actually don't have a ton of questions about the wide receiver room other than, was there a thought of keeping Noah Brown on like the injured reserve that they used on Christian Harris and Kurt Heinisch? Okay, Caserio's in front of the podium. Here we go.
And honestly, is in the past, so now the focus is on Indy. I'm going to start preparing for a really good football team who presents a lot of challenges on, you know, in all three phases, honestly. So, I mean, hopefully we put together a decent team that gives us an opportunity to be competitive on Sunday each week. And, you know, the first opportunity is going to be against Indy here, you know, in a couple weeks or less than a few weeks. So,
now that you've got the roster set, is there any position that you're looking to add depth to as far as some of those players who will cut from other teams?
Yeah, we'll look at that. I mean, there was almost 1,000 names that were on a wire here last night. So, I mean, we'll work through it. So teams will put together the practice squad. So there might be some players that get claimed. I mean, typically there's about 30 to 35 players to get claims. We'll call it one a team, not necessarily one per team, but just from a number standpoint. So, and then players that are claimed, there's going to be an offset, right? Somebody's going to get released. There's a good chance that player is going to go to that respective practice squad. So teams will put together a practice squad, ourselves included. And you're going to carry some depth on the roster. You're going to carry some of your depth off the roster. So wherever our depth lies, whatever it is, every player that's in the building is preparing to play on Sunday. So that's how we approach it. Like, we don't care, like, where you come from, who gets ready to play. Whoever we think can help us win that Sunday, like, they're going to be active for the game. We're going to have to make, you know, 5 to 7 players inactive each week. So we'll go through the process like we do every week. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, there'll be some movement. There'll be some players that I'm sure that we'll look at. And, you know, whether it's this week or, you know, next week or workouts or whatever it might be. But I think we have a decent idea about what's available, what's out there. I think you got to be realistic about, like, are you bringing just a name tag in, or are you bringing a player in specifically for a particular reason that's going to fill a particular role? So, you know, we'll handle it. You know, our scouting staff's done a great job. I would say Lip, Chris Blanco, DJ Debick, you know, pro staff, Steve Cargyle. They've done a great job of going through the league, coming through their teams, knowing what's available, what's not, what's on rosters, what's going to probably be on practice squads, what are our opportunities. So if there's something out there that makes sense, we'll look into it. If there's not, then we won't.
The emergency quarterback rule being vetoed altered how you're thinking or how you constructed the roster?
Yeah, I think that whole story is basically a non-story. I mean, we knew this in March. I mean, it's no different than last year. You either have two players on the roster, one player on the practice squad, or you carry three quarterbacks on a roster, and then you have the ability to make a guy an emergency quarterback. So, honestly, it's a non-story. It didn't affect us. I mean, maybe some other teams, but I mean, this isn't like any news to us. So,
as far as that goes, Case obviously isn't going to play. What do you envision his role being this year? And could you see him being a coach in the future?
It's a good question, man. You probably got to ask him about the coach part, but. You know, Case has been a good player for this organization for a long time. I mean, his leadership, his toughness, his intelligence. So it's unfortunate that he's not going to be able to play football this year. So, I mean, hopefully he's around the team and around the building. He can be an asset to the team, to that room. So a lot of respect and appreciation for Case, what he's done, not only over the last year or so, year and change, but over the course of his career. I mean, you're talking about a guy that one drafted that's basically made it, I don't know, 12, 13 years, whatever it's been. So it's a credit to him. So it's unfortunate, you know, difficult situation. I'm sure there's a lot of emotion involved relative. I don't want to speak for him, but as far as what he does moving forward, ultimately that's going to be his choice. But I think whatever he decides to do, he's going to be really good at it.
On British Brooks, what did you see from him at North Carolina? What did he show you out on the field this year in the preseason?
Yeah, consistent, dependable, tough, good size, good playing strength, smart, can handle multiple roles. Offensively and in a kicking game. So, I mean, British just shows up, doesn't say much, and does his job, which, I mean, the more people like that we have around here, the better for everybody. So, you know, he's earned his opportunity. He's earned his way onto the team. We'll see if he's able to stay on the team. But, I mean, he's here for a reason. It's credit to him. It's credit to DB, you know, and the work that everybody has put in with him.
As you watch what happened on kickoffs throughout preseason and camp and everything, how did that, if at all, impact the roster?
Yeah. Not too much. I mean, I think everybody probably played it pretty close to the vest. I mean, I think, honestly, there was a big outbreak of long returns, it seems like, this last week up to that point. I mean, there was a few returns that popped. So the rules are the rules. I mean, it doesn't sound like anything's going to change drastically. I mean, I think the private equity discussion was a bigger discussion than a kickoff return discussion yesterday. So, but there'll probably be a little bit more strategy that goes into how do you want to handle the return element, how do you set up the return, who do you put back there. I would say what you're going to see different body types respective to different teams. So, like, as an example, wouldn't be surprised if Indianapolis, you know, uses the defensive tackle from Northwestern on kickoff coverage, right? You know, he's an athletic guy, he's big, you know, big ass guy, 285, 90 pounds, that runs good, is athletic, could potentially create some problems. So, all right, how do you compensate for that? How do you prepare for that? Like, we may not have an equivalent player. You might have to do something else. So I'm just using that as one example. Whether or not Indianapolis does that, I mean, they can make their own decisions, but I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happens. So we'll look at it. We spent a lot of time in the spring and in training camp. You know, we've talked in a building about some different things. So, you know, we'll go out there. We understand what the rules and parameters are. So we'll try to put together a good plan each week and try to take advantage of our opportunities.
There was a lot of banter that went on about John Mechie and Xavier Hutchinson. You know, a lot of it was social media, a lot of radio fluff. What did you see from those two in training camp?
Yeah, Sarge, you could tell me what that says. I don't really pay attention to any of that. So I think what you saw with both players was an improvement, was they were available, they were on the field, and they continued to get better, and they took advantage of their opportunities. So I think Hutch was probably one of our most consistent, most dependable players from the beginning of training camp until the end. I'd say Mechie took advantage of his opportunities there at different points. So, I mean, it's all you're looking for. Training camp is about putting the foundation in place, kind of the earlier question, what are we trying to accomplish? Put the foundation in place. Look for individual improvement. Look for a collective improvement. And I'd say those two players are good examples of that. Now, I mean, the hard work starts. So, I mean, there's a lot that went into it to get to this point, but, I mean, now the hard work starts. And, you know, we'll see what are our options game day. What's the role? How can we use them? It's not just about offense and defense. It's about the kicking game as well. So that goes into a lot of discussions that we have, not only daily and weekly, but DeMeco has with Frank and Bobby and Matt on the defensive side of the ball. So, I mean, those two players are great kids. They work really hard. They care a lot about football, and they've went out there and they've improved. So we'll see where that goes from here.
With a player like Noah Brown, did availability just finally catch up to him?
Yeah, I mean, Noah's a good football player. I mean, Noah's going to be on a team. There's no question about it. He helped us win, honestly, probably two games last year by himself. So, I mean, good football player. We understood going into this as we constructed the team, Cody, that, you know, weren't going to be able to keep everybody, right? So, got to make some hard decisions. I'd say that was a difficult decision. So, we kept the players that we felt right now that could help us the most. I mean, I'd say Noah, I mean, certainly part of that discussion. In the end, we just made the decision to move on. But, I have a lot of respect for Noah. He's probably one of the toughest players that we had on this football team. Took advantage of opportunities last year. And, I mean, again, he won us two football games literally by himself, the Cincinnati game, the Tampa Bay game. I mean, I don't know, he had 1,000 yards receiving in two games, whatever it was. But good football player. He's going to be on a team fairly soon and probably going to help a team win. So, I mean, those are the players that, you know, you wish them well. Just can't keep everybody, but certainly wish him well and, you know, have a lot of respect for Noah.
As far as the CBS crowd, he's had a lot going at him this offseason. Bears had to take some attention. How do you think he's handled that so far?
Yeah, I think in the end, he's got to keep the focus on football. You know, I think he's been able to do that. So, I mean, now, like, the offseason's over, basically. So, with the regular season's here. Now it's what are you doing on a day-to-day basis to get ready for the next opponent, which in this case, Indianapolis, which, again, going back to an earlier discussion, I mean, this would be one of the best fronts we face all year. So, really good front. I mean, two of the best linebackers, arguably, in the league. I'd say speed's probably underrated. Nobody talks about speed. Everybody talks about Zaire, rightfully so, because he had 150 tackles last year. So, we got a big challenge in front of us with Indianapolis. So, I think the focus now is on football. Whatever happened in the offseason, I mean, look, players deal with a lot of stuff during the offseason. And, you know, I'd say CJ's handled himself very well. He's very mature. He's very professional. But in the end, the focus is on football because in the end, a lot of that stuff that comes along with being a good player, the opportunities that you get are a result of what you do on a football field. So let's get, in the end, the focus always goes back to football. And I think that's where his focus is and where the rest of our team's focus is.
Jamie didn't have a ton of production in the preseason. What did you see from him that allowed him to make the roster? How much
you're listening to Texans GM Nick Caserio.
I mean, it's practice. It's games. I mean, some guys get more opportunities in games than others. Some guys get, you know, opportunities in practice. I would say the joint practices, you know, the teams use that sometimes as almost another, I would say, scrimmage or game, if you will. So Damian's been available. He's been out there. He's been productive with his opportunities in practice. I mean, limited opportunities in a game. But, I mean, we're glad he's on the team. So we'll see what his role is moving forward. Ultimately, it doesn't matter what I think or what DeMeco thinks. It's what the player does with the opportunities. And then the players are going to determine how big of a role they do or do not have on a week-to-week basis.
You said before the season started, you said before training camp started, excuse me, that it was going to be hard to make this team. When you look at players like Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock, when you're out here observing, what did you see?
Yeah, two young football players that we think can help us win. So, I mean, I think they've been very consistent going back to the spring. I mean, I'd say a lot of people might be surprised about Kamari Lassiter. I mean, the least surprised people are the people in our building. I mean, starting with myself and DeMeco. So, this guy's a good football player. I mean, go back and watch any film you want to watch at Georgia. I mean, played against the best people, very consistent. Same things that we've seen. So, we're glad he's here. I'd say CB's done a good job. CB's got playmaking ability. He can take the ball away. I mean, even a play he made against, was it Pittsburgh or whatever it was? I mean, middle of the field, it wasn't an interception, but not too many players can get to that ball. So they're two good young players. They're two really good kids that care a lot about football. So, you know, we'll see. Hopefully they can help us win some games. And if they can't, then, you know, we'll find somebody else.
You know, when it comes to making some cuts versus availability, even though they might have some guaranteed money or just, you know, if they're not available, just letting them go. Like, what's kind of that balance of, like, looking at the roster and contract construction versus the actual reduction on the field?
I'd say the contract is probably, like, the least of our concerns. Like, the contract's a contract. So we're not making decisions based on somebody's contract. We're making a decision based on the information that we have, what we see on the field, and what we think is best for the team. So, I mean, the contracts, I would say the amount of time we spent on that, like, that's more of a March discussion. So what goes on at training camp, I would say it's de minimis.
With Cam Akers, Mark will come back. He's torn his Achilles twice before. Comes in here, doesn't look like that's ever happened before. What did you see from him in terms of resiliency from that and plays he made?
Yeah, so it's a lot about Cam. I mean, you know, the player we brought in, I don't know, it was right before training camp or during training camp, and he went out there and kind of took advantage of the opportunity. So obviously it says that he's put in a lot of work to get to this point. I'd say it just gives you, like, an appreciation, I'd say, for the level of, like, athlete that you're dealing with. I mean, a normal human being, I mean, to come back from something like that, I mean, that list is pretty short. So say Cam's done a good job. He's been out there. You know, he's been available. He's took advantage of his opportunities. You know, we'll see what that looks like here moving forward.
Was there any difference between year one and year two of DeMeco when going through these roster cuts?
The great thing about him, he's the same guy every day. Like, pick a day of the week, pick a year. I mean, again, I've said this multiple times. Like, I can't say enough about him, our relationship, the ability to communicate with each other on a day-to-day basis. You know, I'm sure he gets sick of me because, you know, we communicate a lot, but it's all through the vein of we just want to make sure we're making the right decision for the Houston Texans, not what's best for the player, what's best for me, what's best for DeMeco, in the end, what's best for the collective whole. And that's how we approach it. I mean, we literally talk every day. We talk this morning. Hey, what are your thoughts? Anybody on the wire? Piques your interest? All right, great. Well, here's this group of players that we're looking at. Hey, take a look at it. What do you think? It's very communicative. It's very fluid. There's a lot of information that goes back and forth. And that's how it should be. So my job is to support him as much as possible. And we're just trying to put the best, best team together for the entire group and for the whole. But, I mean, can't say – I mean, I love the guy. I mean, I love working with him, love everything he's about. And, again, it's not like year one to year two, this, like, big change. Honestly, he's probably been the same guy since he was here when he was drafted by the Texans however many years ago. So that's what you love about him. I think that's what players appreciate about, I would say, specifically him or any coach. They're just looking for some level of consistency on a day-to-day basis, and he has that in spades.
The process of adding guys after rosters are filled out, how intense is that? Because after you draft, it kind of seems like there's like a breath of fresh air. We're done with the process. Maybe you get to relax a little bit. What's it like when the 53s come out immediately after that compared to the draft? Get some water.
Yeah, let's get medical.
Okay.
What? Wait, was that it? Did they cut it off?
Did they cut it off, Ben? Okay.
Yeah.
They cut it off. I hope everything's okay.
Yeah, I was about to make a joke, but maybe something happened.
Yeah.
Somebody said, can we get some water?
Okay.
I thought like a water bottle had spilled.
Yeah. All right.
But there was a clank.
Okay.
And then Nick said, can we get some water?
Something happened off camera.
Something happened off camera. Okay.
I know. I hope it wasn't somebody collapsing.
Yeah,
or something.
Me too.
That's
me
all.
Too.
Just, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
And not to, I was looking forward to that answer too. I'm interested in the mechanics of waiver day, but I hope everybody's okay. All right, let's do this. Let's go to break, and we'll see if we can text somebody over there and see what's going on. But we've got plenty to react to from that press conference with Nick Caserio. So let's take one here. Next, we'll react to what we heard from Nick Caserio. Several different things I thought were very interesting about how they arrived at this 53-man roster that we will get to coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Nick Caserio press conference just finished up. A lot of stuff Nick talked about in there that I think is worth revisiting. I had never heard that number before, Seth, where there's 1,000 names that get put out there yesterday, give or take, and that there's only 30 to 35 waiver claims every year.
Mm-hmm.
I get way more nervous. I was unnecessarily nervous about the Texans this year with their cutdowns, apparently, about the likelihood of guys getting picked up on waivers by other teams. I didn't know it was that minuscule a number percentage wise.
I'm going from memory off of a graph I saw last week. If I remember correctly, I think running backs are pretty heavily weighted on that.
Mm-hmm.
Of the 35 claims, there's more than, you know, it's more than 1/22nd running backs. So that's something that people are, because running backs are kind of a commodity these
days.
Disposable,
like people, yeah.
Yeah, like whether, like the top of the barrel to the bottom of the barrel isn't as vast as necessarily a lot of other positions.
Right.
So that makes sense. But yeah, I guess you don't necessarily look at this as that, oh, it's a gold rush.
Right.
Because these are, after all, they're guys. They are guys that have been released from teams that have any number of players on their team that aren't even going to play in week one.
Yeah.
So it's if the guys that are the guys you get genuinely excited about, I think, tend to be guys that get traded for.
Yeah.
And that's where I think right now, I don't think Nick is being evasive or anything when he talks about how you don't know exactly what you might be targeting because you don't know what's out there. And you don't know what trades are available or who might be interested in trading for one of your players. I do think that just because they're so chock full of wide receivers right now, that without even naming a specific player, there's a chance that one of those guys gets traded away at some point.
Maybe,
because they're overloaded with viable wide receivers right now.
Well, and one of them, you know, listed as a wide receiver is Steven Sims. And I think that's where, and Nick talked about the kickoff return rules. And, you know, how that, and did that affect any decisions? I still think that there's a bit of mystery with this team as to who's going to handle those duties. And maybe that's one of the reasons Damian Pierce is still on the team. That's definitely a reason I would say that Steven Sims is still on the team, particularly in punt return. They cut Desmond King, who's the other guy they have. I still think a big variable in all this is how they view Tank Dell on special teams. Do they view him as a part of the return game? The one chance he got to do that against Pittsburgh this preseason, he busted off like a 25-yard punt return to set up a touchdown pass to someone named Tank Dell.
Yeah, that's right. So, that was you know what? You're right. That entire drive was a Tank Dell. It began and ended with a Tank Dell big plays.
Now, the flip side of that is he got drilled by two players on the sideline. Some would say, you know, unnecessarily you're exposing him to that stuff.
That was one of the things I picked up on because I end up watching a lot of other – I watch way more preseason games of other teams than I typically do in the preseason.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I think the new kickoff rules had the officials all screwed up, not just on kickoffs but on punts. There were a lot of late hits out of bounds that didn't get flagged.
Yeah.
It was to the point where, look, I like as much violence in football as possible, but I like it to be clean violence.
Yeah.
I was getting a little PO'd, especially when Tank got the brunt of it.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I like violence too, but not involving Tank Dell.
There was no flag on that play.
Right. Yeah, it was crazy.
So, I think, did you do a Twitter poll about whether or not people approved of Tank Dell being used as a punt returner?
I don't think. I got to go back and look.
I bet there's pretty stark disagreement on that. I think there's some people that don't want Tank out there as anything other than a wide receiver.
Yeah.
And it would include in that they don't want him blocking on goal line plays, but I don't know.
I didn't. And I said I would, and I didn't.
Okay.
I'll do that. I'll make that a point.
It's one of the many ways you've let me down.
British Brooks. He was asked about British Brooks. I should have known who was doing this press conference, Nick Caserio. I was really hoping for an answer like, that's a guy who made the team on the last day. Instead, what we got was a long quote that ended with, if he's able to stay on the team, end quote.
It was,
And that's a reminder, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's really cool he made the team. It's one thing to get the spot. It's another thing to keep the spot.
I was hoping for, you know, in some of our radio fluff that there might be a more specific question about a British Brooks being used as a fullback.
Yeah.
But we'll have Nick on next week and we can ask him that.
Yeah, we'll ask him.
But because it did very much feel like, okay, yes, like obviously he's a hardworking guy who's tough as hell, but it looked in that final preseason game like that was an audition for fullback.
Right.
And he gave you the best fullback play we saw out of anybody all preseason long. So, I do not like these new hybrid 6'3" tight end / fullbacks because they rarely make an impact as blockers.
Yeah.
And like they just can't get low enough to just get up under the chin of a linebacker. Really, I mean like, swing a sledgehammer on a linebacker's chin and mess up his reads for the next two or three series because his bell is rung.
Yeah.
Old school stuff like that. But in modern football, you can't justify a guy who's just a fullback. So the great, you know, he's got to have some receiving ability, and then he's either got to be capable as a tight end or, in the case of British Brooks, as an actual running back.
Yeah.
So it's if I'm going to have a hybrid, I like this type of hybrid because, man, that dude's got some football violent tendencies to him, and I like it.
He does.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that at that position last year.
I like that Neville Hewitt is the defense's bruiser.
Mm-hmm.
He's like the enforcer type on the defensive side, and he wears 43, and British Brooks wears 44. We've got real poster potential there.
We do. We do.
Yes.
Case Keenum, you could tell from Nick that he, you know, he obviously was disappointed about how Case's season has ended with going on injured reserve. Deferred to Case on whether or not this is a, you know, a segue into a coaching career. And said hopefully he'll be around the building. So I would hope so too.
How is the depth chart for Bobby Slowick replacements right now? I've thought about this ever since they hired D'Amico Ryans, is that, all right, if you're a defensive-minded head coach, you got to have a roster of people that you've got an eye on as offensive coordinators for when that guy leaves, because it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You want to have some continuity. I think that Jerod Johnson, Bill Lazor, Ben McDaniels, and now maybe Case Keenum are all on that depth chart somewhere.
Yeah.
So I feel if they hire from within, maybe they would go from outside the organization. Lots of teams run very similar systems as this. But I think that I do feel good that they're kind of probably grooming all those guys as potential Bobby Slowick replacements.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a really good topic because I think what people don't realize, I think Ben McDaniels was calling plays at times.
Yeah.
Out of practice, and so they.
And he is the passing game coordinator,
right?
Too.
Right, and, yeah. And he's probably an aspiring, like his brother was an aspire. He's Josh McDaniels' brother. For those who don't know, I'm sure aspires to keep moving up the coaching ranks. So he was getting reps calling plays during training camp. So everybody's honing their game. Even the backup offensive coordinators are honing their game calling plays.
Yeah, like Bill Lazor, who doesn't, you know, he's not front and foremost. He's an offensive assistant, but he's been a coordinator in the league before. And yeah, Jerod Johnson took at least one interview last year. So it's they've got to have more than one guy who's laying in wait as the coordinator. You never know. Bobby Slowick might. The Texans do really well this year, and he doesn't like the opportunities that are out there for whatever reason. He might pull his hat out of the ring. You just never know.
Yeah, yeah. So my guess is D'Amico Ryans has a list at least 10 deep of possible names that it could be if Bobby's. He would put it this
like
way.
Like he did when he interviewed with Cal McNair. Like Cal told us the other day. They asked him that, and he had a list of names all ready to go.
Good managers do that in the business world, and I say managers like in a generic term. Like he's a head coach. He's upper management. He has a list of guys. I feel confident. I don't know who they would eventually hire to replace Slowick and if that person's going to be good as Bobby Slowick is, but D'Amico Ryans will not be caught off guard when that day comes.
It's one of those things that even the greatest of coaches succumb to it, and namely Bill Belichick and Andy Reid, two of the greatest coaches of this century. They were both caught in situations where in New England, Bill Belichick ended up having a defensive coordinator and a special teams coordinator co-coordinate the offense.
Yeah.
That was a disaster. Andy Reid took a defensive line coach, right, and made him the offensive coordinator in his last year in Philly.
Yep.
So it's, complacency attacks us all.
Yeah.
Nobody's immune to it. So I think that's one thing as an owner, you got to always be on your head coach and your GM about stuff like that.
Yep.
Not on them, but, you know, be conscious of what their blind spots might be.
For sure, for sure. You know, there was a missed opportunity in this press conference to get Nick really into excited Nick mode when they were talking about the new kickoff rules and if they think that, you know, they're going to make any changes to it or whatever. When Nick, I feel like he was almost begging for a question about the new private equity investment rule for NFL ownership. Like, he proactively brought it up. He's like, you know, the owners got together yesterday and sure, this wasn't nearly as big a topic as private equity funds now being able to buy into NFL teams. And I felt like I couldn't see the video, but I felt like Nick had the look in his face like, guys, huh? We want to talk private equity? Let's go.
Want to talk valuations or something?
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be very interesting. Very
Nick,
interesting indeed.
Don't worry. If you're listening, you will get asked about private equity funds on Payne and Pendergast next time you're on, okay? We'll scratch you right where you itch, you stock market junkie, I tell you. John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson. I thought his answer about that was interesting. He painted a picture as best he could, you know, as much as Nick will, of Hutchinson being a guy who just kept getting better and improving throughout camp. Whereas Metchie, he almost, you could tell by the way he framed it that there were ups and downs with John Metchie. I think the way he phrased it was John Metchie had his spots in camp. So I think that's sort of acknowledgement there that, like, hey, man, like, it was not the smoothest road for Mechie this training camp.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the way the question was phrased was almost like, well, you know, people were making a lot out of this, was it a big deal? Like, I don't feel guilty at all about wondering whether John Mechie or Xavier Hutchinson would get cut.
No.
It was an extremely competitive wide receiver. I don't feel like that was some propped up topic. I think that a lot of our listeners and fans and everybody else were very engaged in that. Yeah. So I will make no apologies for talking about whether the two young receivers on a team that has three A-plus studs at the top, but also Robert Woods,
Noah Brown, other vets.
Yeah.
And by the way, Noah Brown, boy, he was... Nick was all about Noah Brown's performance in those Tampa Bay and Cincinnati games. He said he literally won two games by himself.
He said he had 1,000 yards in two receiving games, in two games.
Yeah.
Which, that's a Bill O'Brien level of... who did he do that with? It was with the running back.
I forget.
Oh, no, it was the running back from Miami.
The one they... Lamar Miller.
Lamar Miller,
yeah.
Lamar Miller, one of the more underrated Texans in history. Bill O'Brien on Hard Knocks in his conversation with Rick Smith was like, yeah, he had like 300 yards rushing that day.
Rick was no. You're thinking of Chris Polk.
Oh, it's Chris Polk.
It was Chris Polk. Yeah. No, they did the same thing with Lamar Miller because that was before the Lamar Miller game. That was the Lamar Miller did that in 2015 against the Texans.
So, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. Chris Polk, which makes it even worse. Because Chris Polk was like ended up being like the fourth string running back on this team. Lamar Miller was at least a starter for the Texans for a few years.
What was his saying?
Bang bang chicken and shrimp.
Bang bang chicken and shrimp.
Bang bang chicken
Him
and shrimp.
Him and his mom shared that.
I knew that's what you were going to ask. I was about to guess. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll dig more into what Nick Caserio had to say. Him and D'Amico Ryans. We'll start to get you ready for In the Loop here as well. We'll find out those guys were listening in on Nick Caserio. What's moved them as far as the Texans putting a 53-man roster together? We will do that coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, let me give an update here because a lot of you are texting in about this. If you were listening to Nick Caserio's press conference, it ended pretty abruptly earlier this morning at about 9:15. Landry Locker asked a question about the mechanics of the waiver process and how hectic that is. And before Nick could answer the question, there was a loud thud and then some commotion in the room. And I think you could even hear Nick saying to get medical. Turns out a media member passed out, stress and heat, hit the floor. He is okay. That particular media member.
Just a little pass out episode.
A little stress and heat, and it gets to
it
you.
Happens to the best of them, kid.
Yeah.
Or whoever it was, lady. I don't know. It happened to me. And you know what happened to me? It was because I was a doctor was explaining my hernia procedure to me.
That was pretty recent, too, huh?
I'm a little too soft to look at guts and stuff and imagine them myself because I passed out like four times. And I would wake up and then I'd pass out again and then I'd wake up and then I'd pass out again.
Was it the graphicness of the description or was it?
Yeah, I don't like anything having to do with guts. And I was looking at the, hold on a second. Let me brace myself.
You don't need to relive it.
They show you the little intestine poking through the muscle wall.
Now I'm gonna pass out.
But I don't, in the moment, I was like, I could tell something was off and I'm like, oh man, is this it? Oh, right. I think I might be having a stroke or something.
Oh, yeah, that's scary, dude.
And then the disappointing thing was that I had no time to really process that even, though. It was kind of, I was good. I was glad I didn't panic in my head. It was more like I was an observer.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, so this is how it ends, huh? Oh.
Well, how long were you out
weird.
For?
Who knows? You know what it is when you pass out. You're either, you know, it could be 4 hours. It could be, it feels like 4 hours when you wake up. I'm guessing it was a few seconds.
I'm not saying this in any critical way. That wasn't a question that you asked, like, how long have I been out for? Or
No, I didn't. Yeah. I never thought to.
Yeah, yeah.
I never thought to ask.
Yeah.
Like, who won the election?
Did we win?
Is that syncope? That's what it's called. Syncope.
Okay.
If you want to sound fancy. I had syncope.
Okay. It
turned out I was dehydrated. So I give myself a pass on the passing out.
Oh, yeah.
The paramedics, like the doctor, I think it was, I think if I had just passed out, he wasn't going to call the ambulance. The fact that I kept passing out,
right?
He called the ambulance, and by the time the paramedics got there, I just had a pleasant chat with the paramedics, and they were having a hard time spiking me, and it was like, yeah, like you look like you're pretty dehydrated, man. So.
Was that the same one where you sent me like the first person point of view picture of you sitting in the back of like a medical truck?
Yeah.
Like a picture of your feet.
And my one Instagram video per 3 years, every 3 years that I put out, I did a nice little montage of my hospital experience.
That's what
there.
It was.
I was watching the Astros game from my hospital bed.
Yep.
Because, you know, and it was one of those things. By the time I got to the hospital, I knew I was fine, but you have to go through the whole procedure. So I ended up being in the emergency room for like 5 hours just with something that I know wasn't an issue, but right. Like, all right, at least I'll check my heart out and everything.
Yeah, and here's your bill. $1,000 to get your heart
I had gotten
out.
Down to 259 that morning, which it turns out some of that was water weight loss, so I shouldn't count it. But you know, in my constant fear of being depleted, at that point that was the lowest weight I was for like the next 4 years.
Wow.
It took me four. I ballooned back up to like 270, you know, because I didn't want to be depleted,
right?
And you know, and finally eventually got below 250.
Dude, any excuse to just go chow down, like, oh
yeah,
I guess I better go eat three
sorry
steaks.
Honey, I didn't know you wanted me to pass out while I was driving or something.
Doctor's orders. So we just got done hearing from Nick Caserio earlier this hour. Again, the press conference ended kind of short. There was a lot of other stuff. It's almost like the media was going through the offensive side of the ball, and then they were going to get to the defensive side of the ball, and then the press conference got cut short. So that's good. More meat on the bone when we talk to Nick pretty soon. We should hopefully talk to him within the next week or so on this show. But yeah, I was hoping to get to some of the stuff on the defense. Like, there was no Christian Harris question. Like, that's a huge question for me right now. You know, they might have gotten to it. You know, like if the press, you know,
right? If somebody hadn't passed out,
right?
Syncope.
Right.
That's the way we in the biz call it.
Syncope.
A little bit of syncope.
Yeah, medical
press
experts.
Conference induced syncope.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What if it was somebody that staged it as a way to stop Landry from having his pernicious question answered?
That would be next level.
It was a very cut and dry question. It wasn't anything. It was an interesting question, but one about the mechanics of all this
of the waiver wire stuff. Yeah. Like of all the things that they didn't get to in the press conference, the one thing I'm the Christian Harris thing worries me right now. The Christian
it
Harris
feels
injury
too much
worries
like
me.
Kyle Tucker.
Yes.
It feels, and by too much, I mean exactly the same as Kyle Tucker, because we had, I mean, worse than Kyle Tucker, because Kyle Tucker, at least you could see the injury happen. With Christian Harris, it's, hey, this is a guy we've been talking up all offseason. He's a key. D'Amico Ryan's defenses work best when you got a guy like Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw in San Francisco, and Alshire and Christian Harris were going to be those two guys for you. And then all of a sudden on day one, midway through practice, we're looking around and we're like, Where is Christian Harris?
Yeah.
Is he even, like, and then that's it. We've seen him, we've just seen little smatterings of him here and there.
Yeah.
Tried to practice one day and had to be assisted off the field.
Yeah.
I'm growing increasingly alarmed over Christian Harris's absence.
I am too, man. I'm worried about it. And it's not a deep position either. This isn't something like, okay, well, Stephon Diggs is out, but you still got Nico Collins and Tank Dell to go threaten teams. You know, like you've got two. They have two linebackers I trust right now, and one of them's Christian Harris, and he's hurt. You know,
a whole lot of other guys that I think honestly they're going to have to treat him like defensive linemen almost. Where you got a big guy in Neville Hewitt when you really need to stop the run. You got a super athletic guy like Hanson when you need that. You got Henry Toa, who I think has come along and developed, but we just don't know exactly what we have in him.
Yeah.
And then you got another couple guys that are raw and athletic, but man, it's kind of dicey right now.
It's dicey, and do good offensive coordinators make that sort of a kill spot on the defense? Like, they got Neville Hewitt in on first down to guard against the run, eh?
Well, teams like the Indianapolis Colts, frankly, where Jonathan Taylor had his two best games of the year versus the Houston Texans last year.
Yeah, there's a lot that can happen there. Let's get Larry and Stafford in here before the guys in the loop jump into the studio. Larry, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, son? Seth, look, I'm glad y'all are talking about that linebacker spot, man, because it got all of our ass worried, man, because when you think about it, even though we're going to be playing some young quarterbacks to start out, but AR-15 is out there, man, and we was banking on Christian Harris and Agent Zero just being able to keep him under containment so that Stingley and all them boys can lock up everybody else. But the thing about it is, and this is one of the things that Nick has kind of earned a little bit of trust with, you're going to always see that he's going to be able to turn over that roster, but he better find some damn linebackers, because Hanson and Hank and all them boys, that's fine and dandy, but I need somebody, man, that's going to be able to make sure that we show up behind them boys, man, because going into this season, I'm okay with exactly how that roster is set up, except for with Robert Woods. Every cut that they made or whatever is justifiable, because D'Amico and Nick believe in your ass competing, and I just believe that everybody on that roster just beat out the dudes that they released. So we're just going to have to believe that Nick is going to go out there and continue to do the kind of work that he normally does with that roster, because he don't mind turning over a damn roster. Mm-hmm. Your ass will be on this roster one day, and he'll cut you the next day and fill it in. So between that linebacker and DBs, we got to get that figured out. But overall, man, son, the beauty of it for me is this is the first time in a long time that it hurt to let some players go. And that tells me, like D'Amico said, we got a damn good football team, man. And you want it to be painful, because you can't keep everybody. But if your mission and your objective is to get your ass to New Orleans, this is the kind of pain you got to go through. We got Indy in 2 weeks. I need to figure out exactly how to get Christian Harris ready in the 4 weeks that he's out. But these boys just got to be ready to go fired up. And we're an offensive team anyway, so I'm long as the main thing, number seven, is over there, I'm going to give us a shot against anybody. But, fellas, it's a fun time to be a Texan. I'm excited about the season coming up, and I don't sit in that section in the roof where the roof is open and they're blinding your ass. So I'm good, and I'll holler.
I appreciate you, Larry. Yeah, it looked hot for the people sitting down in that end zone on Saturday. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm curious, if you were sitting down there, was it as hot as it looked? The fans that were in that sliver of roof opening there in the sun.
If it helps you feel any better, it gives the impression on television that, like, you are God's chosen people.
It does. That's true.
It feels like you're like, oh, these are the chosen ones.
That's true.
They're about to be beamed up to heaven.
Yeah.
The rest of us are stuck here in a hell on earth, but there you are. So that helps.
Yeah.
You know, that's my little fantasy
brain.
Right,
right. Yeah. No, you're blessed if you're sitting in that, if you're sitting in that sunlight.
The Christian Harris thing that Larry brought up as well. Especially if you think about, all right, you're facing Anthony Richardson. We saw firsthand the damage he can do with his legs. I don't think he's one bit ready as a bona fide NFL passer. And I say that based on preseason games versus vanilla defenses. He made some bad decisions. But it's that classic, man, on any given Sunday, he can ruin your whole day just with breaking off a couple runs, the threat of the RPOs and the zone reads and everything. It makes it really tough to – it doesn't matter that he's not a polished NFL passer on any given Sunday. He's a headache. So you think about Christian Harris last year, that kind of shoestring tackle he made on Lamar Jackson, that kind of in the playoff game, those are the kind of things that when you've got a sideline-to-sideline guy, hopefully you can limit some of the damage of a really athletic quarterback. And then Jonathan Taylor had his two best games of the season versus the Texans last year.
Mm.
It's a bit of a headache, man.
Yeah, yeah, and it's 11 days away. It's 11 days away. Okay, a few people texting in that were sitting in that section. We had to move to empty seats in the shade. My friends have season tickets down there. They said it was miserable. They couldn't see without sunglasses. It's hot AF in the club section part that's in the sun. Yeah, because that strip goes. Mm-hmm. It's not just down in the lower bowl down there. It transverses the whole stadium. Someone's saying tell Cal to go buy some tarps at Harbor Freight. I have a 25% off coupon he can use. Hey man, Cal said this is not a DIY situation. All right, this is a custom.
Yeah, it's a specialty parts and everything. Yeah. It's not like you can go pick up the stock parts for the retractable roof stadium.
Yep.
And I'll put that in the book of the Google Doc of business ideas. We need stadiums that are kind of like modular homes.
Okay.
Modular stadiums.
Yeah.
So you can have some more standardization across
the
industry.
Right, or tiny stadiums, like tiny homes. We'll have a tiny stadium. Yeah,
yeah, that'll be the new trend.
That'll be the new trend, yeah. One, we'll sell five seats for $8 million apiece. We were told earlier, John Lopez and Reggie Atatula joining us here, they are in the loop. We were coming up, or the listeners were coming up with new nicknames for Tommy Townsend. Tommy Rockets is a good one, but we were soliciting other entries. Someone said Tommy Moonshot, and they said, be careful, Lopez is going to correct you on
the meaning
of moonshot.
Yes. Yes, I will.
What is that all about?
Because people use moonshot. You're going to make me go on a tangent, aren't you?
Yeah.
I'm curious what it's all about. I'm like, why? Is this a hill
Let's
that
go
Lopez
ahead and isolate real quick.
People, yeah. All right, here's
clear
your
the side.
Here's your history. I'm going to do the 1-4 flat. That's my old basketball play. 1-4 flat. Just give the ball to him and let him go.
Yeah.
People have used this, misused this for decades. A moonshot, like a big giant Jordan home run, they call a moonshot. That's not a moonshot. The moonshot comes from Wally Moon, even before my time, but I know my baseball history.
Right, yeah.
Wally Moon from the Dodgers, when they had, I think they played in New York with the short porch in right field, whatever that stadium was, I'm drawing a blank. He would just sort of flick the shot right over the fence.
Oh, kind of like the pesky pole
real
in Fenway.
High,
yeah.
And it would only go like 275 feet. And they called it a moonshot because he was Wally Moon. So a moonshot is not a giant home run.
It's not a ball that could hit the moon.
A moonshot is like a flick of the wrist.
It's the opposite.
Barely gets in. It's the exact opposite. Barely gets into the Crawford box.
Okay, and this agitates you to no end.
Because it's incorrect.
Okay.
A moonshot is not a big, big home run. It's a little home run that just gets into the front
See,
row.
See, Reggie, I got him on point right before the show. I got him agitated.
In a sports context, they credit Vin Scully, who is doing the play-by-play, for referring that to that as the Wally Moon home
run. A moonshot is not a big home run. It's a little home run.
I blame Vin Scully for this being
Use it
argument.
Right, people.
Yeah, yeah.
In a sports context, we'll
in
say
sports
that.
Context.
Because it was first used in 1959 by
Yeah, that's even before my time.
Seth is dishing this all off the top of his head right now. That's what he remembers about
Wally Moon. 1949 was Wally Moon.
Are we all good now on moonshot?
Yeah, no,
probably
we're good.
Not.
I just needed an explanation.
Okay, wait. I have to ask them another question, though.
Okay.
Okay, so a lot of people, several people had suggested, as I was describing Tommy Townsend's punts, they're less like a missile, because missiles are kind of, these days, are kind of straight line trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought of like a medieval long archer. People said Tommy Trebuchet, which those catapults. I felt like that was a little too niche a reference.
It reeks of trying too hard.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
It sounds good, though, Tommy Trebuchet.
It does. I'm not going to lie. The alliteration is there and everything, but it does feel like you're trying a lot.
Y'all laying out the roster today and all that good stuff?
We're thinking about it.
Yeah, it's a good topic. Yeah, we got Nick Caserio, most of him. There's the... cut short a little bit at the end. We can joke about it now. The person who took a fall was okay.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.